Have you ever struggled with fear in your life? Have you ever had the thought that I am not brave? Well, I'm here today to tell you that you are. Welcome to the Brave Podcast. I'm your host, Alexis Newland, and I'm so glad that you're tuning in here today. Each week, a friend and I get together and share stories of what makes them brave. So sit back, relax, enjoy your favorite cup of coffee or tea, and get ready for some engaging conversation. And remember, no matter what your story is, you are brave. Hey guys, we're back. Welcome to the first full episode of the Brave Podcast Season 2. Woohoo! I'm so excited to be back. I took a break 6 weeks and it was so needed. Guys, rest is amazing. It really helped kind of refresh me, help the creative juices get back to flowing. Rest is so beneficial, and I am terrible at not getting enough rest. I don't know if you're like me, but I feel rest can equal to laziness, and so I constantly push myself, but it is not that. Rest is wonderful. One of the days from during Christmas break, I just had a movie day. I stayed in my pajamas and I watched movies, and it was wonderful. I loved it. Why don't I do this enough? I need to make this a practice at least once a month where I just don't do anything. No work, no working on the podcast, no trying to do other projects, just rest and relax. And it felt so good. Oh my gosh, you guys, I highly recommend it. So yeah, took a 1 day rest break during the Christmas holiday and it was great. The rest of that time I used it to help build a website and work on restructuring things for the Brave Podcast and record a mini episode. So before this episode, if you want to know all the things that are changing with the Brave Podcast, or not like changing the podcast, but kind of expanding what the Brave Podcast is going to be, it's going to be more of like a ministry thing, check out the episode prior to this. I did a mini episode. It's about 20 minutes long, and it's just me sharing a story of how God helped me during a time where I was very afraid. If you haven't heard that episode yet, go back and listen to it. It's about 20 minutes, and then you can jump back on this one. So, yeah, that's what's been going on with me. I'm actually home today with vertigo as I'm recording this. Vertigo is not fun, you guys. Oh my gosh. And my silly self, not listening to my body needing to rest, I'm like, well, what can I do? Can I clean? Can I do this? I'm like, no, I just need to sit. And just sitting, because you have to, because with vertigo, I feel like I'm on a boat all the time walking around my house. It's really funny. I feel like I'm just swaying everywhere, and it's really disorienting, but it has forced me to rest. And so I've just been using this time to kind of catch up on my podcast editing. And so I'm able to bring you guys this episode. On to the episode. So my guest today is Mike Acker. Mike was a pastor who went into sales, who stopped his sales job and started his own coaching publishing company. His story is so fun. He comes from parents who dad was a drug dealer and mom was a witch. They moved to Mexico and they got saved and then became missionaries. His story is so cool. You guys are going to absolutely love his story and how God has used him throughout his life. Definitely one of the funnest interviews I've had so far. So without further ado, here is my interview with Mike Acker.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. Me too.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying California right now? What part of California do you live in?
I'm in Fresno, so I'm in the central part. Yeah. Right now, it finally cooled down, so it's only going to be 79 today. So we're
only
all really
79.
Happy.
79.
Yeah.
I lived in the Inland Empire there.
Oh, yeah.
Near Anaheim for a while, too. So it was hot one summer. It was 114 one summer.
Oh, yeah. We had that, and I'm so glad that is behind me. I love California. I hate the heat. Like, I hate the super hot. But I love, like, the fall and winter. It's great here.
Yeah, yeah. Are you a native Californian?
No, I'm from Georgia originally.
Oh, okay.
My mom moved out here in 2001, and I begrudgingly followed her and fell in love with it. Because I'm like, I'll never live in California. I thought California is all like LA, so I was like, I don't want to move there. And
yeah,
just fell in love with it. And so moved to Fresno for grad school and found a great church here and fell in love with the people. So I've been here. Yeah.
Cool. Where'd you go to grad school?
Fresno State.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice. And then what'd you study?
Rehabilitation counseling. So basically, I help people with disabilities find work. At the time, I did. Now I work with children as a recreation therapist. I ended up going back to my bachelor's because I made more money in my bachelor's than I did in my master's.
Really?
Yeah, I was surprised. I was like, well, I thought having a master's, I'd make a little bit more. But I love what I do now, working with kids and helping them with disabilities and doing fun things with them. So that's what I do now. And then podcasting.
Awesome. So what, by the way, I was going to grab my book. I forgot to put it in front of me. What led you to podcasting?
Actually, God started pushing this on me. I'm a writer and would hope to have a book someday. And the Lord is like, you should think of podcasting. And I was like, absolutely not. I'm a writer. I don't like to talk on camera or on a microphone. So that would be a terrible mix. And God's like, okay, I just want you to think about it. And then he blessed me with like all the equipment I needed, all the resources. I'm like, okay, I think God wants me to start a podcast. And so that's how it got started. And so I have been doing it for 10 months now, and I love it.
Nice.
It's like just a different form of, to me, a different form of writing.
Right.
I love it. Yeah.
So what's your book going to be about?
I don't know yet. It's going to be about, because I love that you're talking about fear. Mine will probably be about fear because I have something that I have conquered a lot in my life too, through just kind of growing up with a family that was a worrying family and
yeah,
constantly worrying and being afraid of doing things. And the Lord's like, you can't live that way. Living in fear is a horrible way to live.
Yeah.
So I eventually want to write about that. I just don't know when. So yeah.
Nice. That's exciting. All right on. Yeah. well, good. Well, and thanks for having me on your show. When did you launch your show? I think you said it was pretty new.
Yeah. I launched it January of 2020. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So during the craziest year of my life. Yeah. This 2020 has been bananas, but God's like, start a podcast. And it's been great. It's been growing and COVID hasn't affected it too much, but yeah, it's just been great. I'm glad I'm doing it now because it's a way to offer hope, because a lot of people I do talk to who aren't believers right now are just feeling either very depressed or just kind of hopeless, and it's really sad.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah, it is very interesting to see what people are doing during this time for hope.
Yeah.
And, you know, initially work slowed down for me. So I was actually in sales before doing this full time. So this is all I do. I just do coaching and working with communicators. And then I actually launched a publishing company. So I have a small publishing company.
Wow. Mm-hmm. What got you into that? Like becoming a coach, and I'm recording on this. I can always edit this around, but like what got you into wanting to become a coach and to do this full time and all that? Yeah.
Should we officially start instead of having a conversation?
We should officially start. Yeah. But it's been cool. I actually end up having better interviews when we just start conversating, and then yeah. So this is great. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I can answer without having to do retakes and stuff. I've been doing those for a long time. So,
give people your name at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me on your show, Alexis. My name is Mike Acker, and I also lived in California for a bit, but I'm originally from Washington, then lived in Mexico for 7 years and came back to Washington. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mexico, 7 years, grew up there. So I know what it's like to be the person who is awkward and doesn't fit in with everybody else. Because I was tall, langly, blonde-haired, blue eyes, and stood out. I then moved back to Washington, and then through a series of events, ended up not going towards law school, though I was accepted, but towards ministry, and did that for 19 years.
Wow.
And what I'm doing now is I have two companies, as Advance and Advantage. So I really like the AD words. And Advance is all about coaching in terms of leadership and communication. That's what I primarily do. Then through a series of events, ended up starting a publishing company. And so I have a small publishing company that's brand new as of August.
Whoa. So it's really, really new. Wow.
Yeah. 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 So I tell people, I kind of got into it through your whole theme is bravery, right?
Yeah.
And this whole last 2 years have been a series of conquering fear, launching out, doing things new, teaching other people. I mean, I'd been in ministry for 19 years. It's what I'm educated in. It's what I was good at. That's what my life was. I was a pastor. And then we can come back to this part. I just hit a wall where I didn't even want to go to church anymore, which is kind of a problem when you're a pastor and you don't want to go to church.
You're like, I'm done with this, but I'm the leader. What am I going to do?
Yeah. So, and I'm going to get up there and speak. And at that point in time, I had been a senior pastor, but at that point in time, but I didn't want to show up. I didn't want to go to church. There was tiredness in my soul. I didn't want to read the Bible. I didn't want to pray. And I was just tired. And even when we stopped and we left and I went towards sales, I told my wife, I don't want to go to church. And she said, well, we're going to go to church. I said, okay, I know, but I don't want to. But from there, I started going into sales, did quite well in sales, and was really building a name for myself in the company. It's a company that goes in and out of the Fortune 500.
Okay. So
it's large, it's all over the place. It's global. And then from there, I was doing the side coaching. I had been life coaching first, and then I was doing communication coaching, and then it just kept on building. And so I had kind of this spot where, which one are you going to do? Are you going to do the comfortable sales position that pays well and is recession proof? Or are you going to be launching out on your own? And so I launched out on my own, and then at the same time, double launched with my publishing company. So that's kind of the short of it. And there's all these stories of overcoming fear, overcoming doubt, and really getting to be in this spot. So now I am self-employed, entrepreneur, business leader, however you want to define it.
Wow. That's amazing. So I want to jump back. What got you into Mexico? You grew up there. So your parents missionaries, and that's how you ended up there. What was it like living in Mexico?
Yeah. So really, I mean, what got us to Mexico was my parents' story. My dad was a drug dealer and my mom was a witch. And so then they met Jesus when I was 4 years old.
Wow.
So they had this radical encounter with Jesus where my dad seriously believes that God spoke out loud to him. I don't doubt it. And then my mom had this incredible time of meditating, and she was challenged to meditate on the blood of Jesus. She did. She said, whoever that Jesus is, that's real, and everything else I've been doing is false. So that began their journey. They met Jesus. They took us to China in 1984 to smuggle Bibles into China. They put the Bibles into our suitcases, you know, those old hard ones that would hit your knee. And they put it through the scanner, and we didn't get caught. We smuggled Bibles in China when I was 4 and 6. My sister was 6. And then we went into just a normal life. My dad worked and was a professional and no longer doing drugs. He hadn't done that for a while. And we just embraced Christian life. But my parents felt like there was something lacking.
Uh-huh.
Even though we were very active and going to nursing homes and going to food banks and doing those kind of things, they just felt like there was something more. And my dad wasn't excited about the life of non-adventure that he was living before. He'd crashed planes in Colombia and stuff. And now he was... Yeah. So he spoke Spanish, and we would do things in Mexico every now and then anyway. So we were invited to go down there. And my parents moved our family down there. I remember my dad coming home and just saying, we're moving to Mexico. So that was quite shocking because I was in a small little 5,000, I think at the time it was 3,000 person town. Very comfortable, knew everybody, liked everybody, loved my school. And then we moved. And it was going to be 9 months and ended up being, for my parents, 13 years. For me, it ended up being 7 years. And just threw ourselves into culture. So you said, what was it like? Well, my best experience was at fifth grade. I had a friend who had been thrown into immersion school, but he'd been thrown into a private school. Yeah. So I told my dad, hey, dad, why don't I do that? To learn Spanish, because I'm having a hard time learning Spanish through the courses and the teaching that you're doing. But what if you just threw me in school like my friend did? And he thought it was a great idea. Well, he knew someone in the public school, in the inner city public school, of downtown Mazatlan, Mexico. Large city, downtown. Back when there was 2 theaters in town and 2 movies showed at a time, and they were 6 months released after the United States. So this is before cruises went to the town.
Yeah.
It wasn't what it is now. And I stood out. And so it was intimidating. I used to get sick, psychosomatic sickness, where I would literally caused my body to be sick because of the absolute terror of going to school every single day. My parents would bring me, drop me off in downtown, drop me off in school. I didn't understand anything that was going on. everybody treated me way different. Like I was this alien, and I was.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I would have to navigate my way home. So I'd have to walk about 10 blocks to the marketplace and catch a bus. And back then, the buses were these wood slatted buses where you could see the floor underneath you.
Oh,
and
man.
You could see the road. And then I would take about a 40-minute bus ride home. And that was...
That's, wow. I can't imagine being a kid going through that.
It was awful. And I'd say that there was nothing really great I did during that time except for keep showing up.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times in life, it's just showing up is the thing that matters. And sometimes it wasn't by choice that I showed up. My parents would drop me off and wouldn't give me the opportunity to do anything. But it did jumpstart some of my Spanish.
Okay.
And then the next year I went to a school a bit closer to me. And so that was more comfortable. And those first couple of years were odd because I really, really identified and clung to my American identity, clung to it.
Yeah.
And you know how when you look back at life, there's different things that you think were amazing. Mm-hmm. And the further you look back, the more amazing you make it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I did. So, I mean, the longer we lived there in those first couple of years of months passed by, the more and more glamorous the United States became.
Yeah.
So I would talk about living there all the time. And then my buddy moved back. And so I just pleaded with my family. So they let me. They let me move back to the United States on my own in eighth grade. And so I went there with, not like on the street or anything, right?
Sling with a friend or family.
with some family members, friends of the family. So I moved there. And then I realized it wasn't as great as I thought. And it wasn't as amazing as I had built it up. And so when I came back, I really embraced Co. And to the point where by the time 7 years had passed, I was more culturally Mexican than I was American. And I was planning on going to law school there. You go straight into law school in there. So okay. For 5 years. And really loved it. And so I still speak Spanish and still fluent and still have friends that I talk to in Mexico.
Okay. So what brought you from law school to ministry? How did you make that transition?
Yeah. This was the moment in time where I think there's lots of conversions we have in life, right?
Yeah.
And my first moment of conversion where I became born again Christian, committed to Jesus, was really about 5-6 years old. My parents taking me to those camps. I really believe in kids ministry because it worked on me. And they brought me there and I said, yes. And I really was a devoted child who loved God and really believed in him and read my Bible. And then Mexico was hard in those latter years to my parents. Although I really embraced it. My parents had some really difficult times. My sister ended up kind of escaping Mexico, got pregnant at 17, moved back to the United States. And that was just hard on my mom and my dad. Yeah. So you can imagine. So at that point in time, I did one of those moments, and I'm sure that you and maybe many of your listeners can relate to one of those moments where like, God, if you can't do what I want you to do, then I don't know if you're worthy of following.
Hmm.
Kind of holding him hostage, right?
Yeah.
And I blamed him for the pain that I was experiencing. But the reality is it was the sin that others were doing that created the pain that I was experiencing.
Yeah.
And I think that's often the case. We blame the church, but really it was one or two, three, four or five people who hurt us. And it wasn't Jesus. It wasn't even the church. It was some people. Yeah. And that's what happened to us. So I thought, you know what am I going to do professionally? And my dad was an attorney at that time. And so I just thought, well, that's a great route. I think I'm fit for that. And I applied to the top law school in Mexico, got accepted, got an internship ready. It was really prestigious, really cool, really neat. And then my parents said, Mike, we're going to take a year and we're going to go back to the United States. And your dad's going to fly back and forth for work and to run the mission. We had a large mission at that time. But your mom's going to be there to help your sister and your niece. And they said these words, do you want to live here by yourself? Your dad will be here 1 week a month, or do you want to come back? And so Alexis, that was that moment, right?
Yeah. Like,
defining moment where you just go, what do I do?
Yeah.
And I knew at that point in time, I was frustrated with God. I was hurt by God. That's how I felt. And my parents couldn't make me go to church. So I knew I was not on a path that would lead me closer to Jesus. I was, when my parents were out of town, I was hosting parties at our house. And I knew that if I stayed, I would drift even further away to who knows what outcome.
Mm.
And so I decided in my senior year of high school to move back with my family and start over where I knew no one back in our hometown. They'd all moved off to college and moved on with their lives, and move back and try to find what it would look like for me to re-enter life in America. It was probably one of the biggest decisions I've ever made in my life.
I can imagine. And the culture shock too, from like you said, basically being a Mexican at this point, coming back to America, a whole new way of life.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I would come in Mexico at EU, and specifically Latino culture, you go in and you greet everyone. So you walk into a room and there's 40 people there, and you're going to shake their hands and give all the ladies kisses on the side cheek, right? And so I'd come into a youth group because I was trying to find places to connect and knew I should probably be part of a church. So I'd come in and shake every single person's hand.
Oh, wow.
I did know that I wouldn't do the side kiss with people. And also in Mexico, well, you just drop by someone's house and their house is always open. And it wasn't until I got married that I found out that was not acceptable in American culture. Like, it would not have been weird for me all the way up until 29 years old when I got married to just, hey, I'm by Brett's house. I'm going to swing by.
Yeah.
And I did. And looking back, I'm pretty sure that people were not always excited to randomly see me come to their house. So I have learned better in that regards. But then I went into ministry from there. I got involved in a church, and I was still thinking law school, but I was finishing out my senior year at a college, kind of clept out of the last classes. And then I went to do my undergrad or my first general requirements. And I thought, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
I was involved in serving at a church and I was kind of interning and just got more and more involved, and doors started opening. And I really felt like God was saying, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go out and be a pastor. Felt that specifically a couple times. When I was reading John 21 one day, I was reading it. It says, Peter, do you love me? Then feed my sheep. It does that three times. So I felt as I was reading that, while I was still pursuing more of a professional outside of pastoring degree, I thought, God, is this to me? Are you saying this? Mike, will you feed my sheep? That was a moment where I said, okay, I'm in. I added on some more classes in Bible and got more directed that way, finished up with more of a general degree. Then straight out of college, a couple of years, I took on an associate pastor role, did that. The pastor left. I became a senior pastor at 26 while I was still single.
Wow.
And then did that for 10 years, did it very well. Everything I did grew, and then did that for 10 years and then joined the staff at a church in California for a while. And then after about 19 years, I was just tired.
You needed to do something else.
Yeah. I don't even know what I wanted to do. I kept on applying for places. It was one of those things where you know that you don't want to do exactly what you're doing, but you have no idea what you want to be doing.
Exactly. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's a hard place to be. And I've experienced that. I know that I'm tired of doing this, but what do I do now?
Yeah. So I applied at random jobs and then I'd get the interview and I'm like, no. And I applied at some church jobs and those are the ones I could easily get interviews for. And I was like, no, I don't think that anybody should ever work at a church as a job for money.
Okay. Now,
I think pastors should get paid.
Yeah.
I think church staff should get paid. But I don't think like, hey, I'll go work at Pizza Hut for money if I need money.
Yeah.
But I don't think you should go work at a church for the job aspect. That's secondary.
Okay.
So I didn't want to just do that. Then it was during that time I got recruited to join a sales team. And that's when I moved back. And that's when I told my wife, I don't want to go to church. Which after years of going to church together, and she'd grown up in the church, she didn't think that was a good sentiment.
No. So what did you guys do with that? If you're not wanting to go and she's like, we're going, would you just go anyway and just kind of push through?
Yeah. So I did a couple of things that were very helpful. One is I did express it.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people don't express it and then it blows up. So I expressed it. And then I actually went through counseling, and then I knew that I needed to talk this out although friends and family and wife, great to talk those things out with. For me, I needed someone to tell me if I was crazy, with somebody, yeah. just the fears and the frustrations and the questions I had. And so I went to a counselor, and I had learned many years before. My mom died when I was 25, and a lot had happened. That's when I became a senior pastor at the same time. So there's just a lot of things going on. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, I thought going to a counselor was stupid, and it was either for people who were weak or people who were just desperately broken.
Yeah.
And it was during that time I listened to three well-known people talk about going to a counselor. And I thought, wow, if these well-known, really national names have gone to a counselor, so could I. So I'd gone to a counselor back then and had experienced that healing. So fast forward, I knew I needed someone that I could discuss this with who would help me understand whether or not I was crazy.
Yeah.
And that was healing. So I expressed my sentiment. I went to a counselor. And then the third thing was I just kept taking steps. And I think one of the things that we do is when we're tired, we stop.
Yeah.
And we just need to keep on going some direction. You might not be going as fast, and you might be walking with a limp, but you need to walk with a limp as well as you can at mm-hmm. the pace that you can, going somewhere. So I kept on just limping along, and I don't know exactly how long it was, but it was a while. And then I was having kind of a conversation with God in my mind, and I felt like God said, or brought scripture of mine, a passage in Revelation that says, go back and do the things that you once did. And so in that context, he's talking to a church, and he says, you've lost your first love. Go back and do the things you once did. And it reminded me, and here I was about 28 at the time, or sorry, 38 at the time. And it reminded me of something I had written when I was 28. And when I was 28 as a pastor, I was working on my master's, and I had written out all these like little fragments of stories and thoughts and kind of a devotional type deal,
yeah.
of what to do to grow your soul and how to get healthy and how to build yourself up. And so I had written these out. So I went back 10 years later and listened to my teaching essentially of when I was 28 and healthy. And I went back and did the things that I had once done. So that became this kind of recharging aspect to myself. I got that help that I needed.
Yeah.
And then I told you I had published that book. So I have a book called Grow Your Soul, which starts out by saying, I don't want to go to church. That's the first sentence in the book, is just me saying, I don't want to go to church. And I talk about a little bit of how I got there, but then more importantly, the steps I took to get back.
Okay. And so you're in sales, and then what made you take the leap to go into entrepreneurship? Because that's something I want to do eventually, but like, yeah. terrifying to be your own boss. It's on you. You're the money maker. It's your job to make everything grow. And so like, how did you make that leap?
Yeah. So for me, what I was doing is I had a side hustle. Okay. And while I was in California, I just didn't have enough money to really actually pay the rent. And then we had one of those crazy summers, right, where it's 114 degrees one yeah. day, and the AC breaks.
Oh.
And so then they brought in the property manager, brought in those window units. When we got the bill, it was $800 electric bill. So already we're struggling with paying the rent, and now we don't have enough money to pay the electricity. So I just had to do something. So I looked for something to do on the side. And I was actually doing some general life coaching because I had taken a course when I was in my 20s. I was just doing some a little bit and charging some nominal fee for it. But then what really came up in those times were people kept on asking me about communication. Mike, I know you're a speaker. I have this engagement coming up. What can I do to get better at this engagement? And so when they asked me to help with their communication, I kind of started leaning more into that and started reaching out to people who needed that help. And here's what I think is a great tip for any entrepreneur who's listening, and for yourself, for myself as a reminder, is often we're trying to fill a need that we think exists, but we don't actually know if it exists.
Yeah.
And so instead, people are coming to me about communication help, and here I am trying to help them in these other areas. And so when I realized I had enough people coming to me about communication, I thought, oh, there's the need. instead of trying to water this plant that has plenty of water, let me go water this plant that is coming to me saying, hey, I need you. So I started leaning more into that and then developing different lessons, developing different thoughts about it and coaching and reaching out to people, really formed actual a business because I was starting to make money. At that time, I had switched over to sales and still had this side hustle on the side. And then really, I call this just following the breadcrumbs. I had enough breadcrumbs, but the crumbs kept on getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, I was already eating a cookie, but now I got these breadcrumbs I'm picking up over here. And I just kept on following them and following where the need was. Then I wrote the first book, Speak With No Fear. I believe anybody who's listening, and you mentioned wanting to write a book, I believe if you have any message to share, you got a story to tell, you got a business to build, you got a ministry that you want to launch, that a book is an incredible way for you to get your thoughts, your ideas, your words out there. That's what happened with me. All these lessons I wrote for people, I put in a book. And then the book did something that I wasn't quite ready for it to do. It took off.
Wow.
Speak With No Fear, my first book, over 300 reviews on Amazon in just over a year.
Wow.
Got noticed on Forbes, one of the best books on public speaking by Book Authority, and on the list goes. So then all of a sudden, I had a full-time job, but the breadcrumbs of this other cookie were getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
People were reaching out to me from the Middle East, Singapore, Sweden, UK, Australia, and then, of course, all across the United States. So now, literally, I have clients that have come to me from around the world because of that book.
That is amazing.
Right. But it still wasn't enough to live on. And it was great. But I was also investing in learning more about this and setting up the business. So I have this full-time job and then I have the side thing. So when do you go from one to the other?
Yeah.
And this is where bravery really steps in. And it's really has to come down to that belief in, yes, absolute belief in God, but also belief and not just fake belief. Like, hey, I think I can, I can think I can dunk all I want, but there's no chance I can dunk. It's not going to happen. It's not in me. And I can think I could sing at some amazing concert, and I just can't. But I do think that I could build a business and be profitable on my own. And I had that belief. So I leaned into this possibility and went in for it. So I dropped my job during a pandemic.
During the pandemic.
Wow. Yeah. While everything was safe and secure and recession proof, and I dropped something I had grown to understand and had done well at and paid well. And just 2 months ago, I left that. Actually, just 1 month ago. 1 month ago yesterday, I started full time working for myself.
Wow. You are brave. You are very,
It's, I love what Mark Twain says, right? So I have a couple books now. So Speak With No Fear is one of them. I have another book called Lead With No Fear.
Yeah.
And in Lead With No Fear, we talk about Mark Twain's quote, courage is not the absence of fear, but that ability to challenge it, to step into it, to confront your fear. So going from a well-paid, secure position to, I had some clients, but only as many clients as I could take within a week. And I had a 50-hour week job. And so really, I only gave myself 10 hours a week on the side job. So I launched and at the same time moved my family across country.
So where are you now?
So we're in Fairhope, Alabama, which is in the Gulf Coast. Sally just passed by us and went over our house and took away our trampoline.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, so you're in the South. I'm from Georgia. Wow, you're in Alabama. How is it going from the West Coast to the South?
Yeah, very different. People take more time and intentionality to be friendly to you here.
Yes.
And you always hear about that, but it's different when you experience it. And it's different when you experience it living here versus just visiting. So this has nothing to do with anything else we're talking about, but it's fun. I used to get my oil changed. And in Washington, when you get oil change, it's like a vending machine. You go up to the vending machine, you put your money in, and you get your candy out.
Yeah.
And so when you're getting your oil change in California or in Washington, you go. It's cordial. It's nice. It's professional, but it's quick and to the point.
Exactly.
And you don't expect them to talk to you. You don't expect them to remember your name. You expect them to do a good job and change your oil. So I get here and I need to get my oil changed and I take it to a place and you know, it's COVID time. So I'm sitting in the car. There's no getting out of the car. They got the mask on and the guy comes over and I'd say that it took a little bit more time for them to do, but partly because the guy took a genuine non-faked interest in me, found out that I moved, brought someone over to tell me where to do some kayaking, brought someone else over to talk to about some of the other areas in the car, and then said, hey, here are all the areas that you need to visit, and gave me a list and took time. So I went home and I was like, hey, that took way longer than I've ever done in an oil change, but this is what I learned. So it was, yeah, it was a real deal.
Yeah, it's a different world. It's a different culture. When I came from Georgia, I went to Arizona State for school. And the contrast, I went to someone's house for dinner and I started helping with the dishes and he looked at me like I had two heads. We're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, this is what you do. Where I grew up, you help the host clean up. And they're like, no, you don't do that here. Just go sit down. It's just, it is so different. So now I'm way more Californian now than I am Georgia since I've been here so long. But yeah, it's a different world. But I do miss that part of the South, that people really wanting to get to know you and talking to you.
Yeah. It makes getting coffee longer. It makes getting food longer. But if you're okay with that, and I think we should be.
Exactly.
I think there's a lot of rushing in life. If we're okay with that, then it becomes quite enjoyable. Also, in Seattle, Seattle's known for being very polite, and then we call it kind of the freeze out. And it's like this real deal. We're very polite, but also to the point. And no, not that Seattle's mean or anything like that. It's very different. And so coming here, all of a sudden people want to take that interest in you. Also, you got to be careful how you treat people, how you drive, because it can come back to you.
Yeah.
And you're not just someone who shows up and orders something and leaves, or someone who hires a fence contractor and then pays them and then reviews them positively or negatively.
Yeah.
This is actually part of a community. Mm-hmm. And word gets around. If you're a jerk,
Yes, it does.
It's going to get around. I got to admit that after California and Washington, especially after California, and having learned how to drive in Mexico, I'm an extremely, extremely aggressive driver.
Yes, same here. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
In California, I was on a 91 and the 15 all the time. So aggressive. You can't get anywhere, especially I had a stick shift, right?
Yeah.
And a sports car. So it was just like this. And here, I pull out to the road and people are turning and they're just taking forever. I'm like, why? There's a huge gap right there. Why are you not going?
Yeah.
And in California, they would have gone like way beforehand. In Mexico, they would have gone before they even had a chance to and maybe had an accident, which happened to me multiple times on a side note. But going back to here, I want to honk my horn and my wife keeps on reminding me, don't do that. These are our neighbors. These are people you're going to see. And you do not want to get the reputation of the horn a honker here.
Yeah.
Anyway, had nothing to do with anything else we were talking about.
No, it was fun.
It was fun.
A little rapid. I'm always interested how people feel coming from California or the West Coast to the South, because it's so different. I remember I went on a trip with a friend. We were in Arkansas, which is, you're just slow there. And so I grew up in the South, so I knew people take their time, they're slow. And he, I think, is from Washington, lives here now. And just watching him freak out over how long it was taking them to get a burger was so funny. I'm used to it. They're slower here. And it's in it too. And he's like, oh my gosh, how long is this going to take? He wasn't verbalizing it to the person, but he was just saying it to me and another friend. The other friend was from Florida and he was just laughing too. It was just really funny how it's just so different. California is just go, go, go. And calmer, slower pace over there in the South.
Yeah. If you don't go when you have a chance to in California, you will never go.
No.
Traffic doesn't stop. I remember traffic one time. I was like, oh, surely there's going to be no traffic. I had to drive to the airport or something. Surely there's going to be no traffic at 2 a.m. Nope, there's traffic.
Yeah.
5 a.m. is traffic. And then random times when it should be traffic, there's not traffic. I'm like, oh, it's going to take me forever to get home. And it took me 20 minutes instead of an hour at 6 p.m. So no rhyme or reason in the roads in California.
No, none at all.
When I look at the journey, though, that I've really been on, it's been a fascinating journey. Often it's pray, take the opportunity, And sometimes you think you know what God's telling you to do and you really don't.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have no idea and you make the decision, you find out you're right in it. But years ago when I was in college, I remember a professor who had been a missionary as well. And someone asked him this question. This has stayed with me for so many years. And he said, stop wondering if you're in the center of God's will. If you're seeking his will, then you are at the center of it.
Oh, I like that.
And so I've lived by that. Yeah, I want to hear God's will. Yeah, I want to be directed. Yeah, I want to understand where he wants to take me. I'm making big decisions. Yes, I want to understand. But in the midst of it, I am asking to be in the center of his will. That no matter where I'm at, I have him with me. And I can make decisions, whether as a pastor or sales or as now a coach and a publisher, that influence. And one of the big shifts I made in this whole thing was realizing that, and I think it's even why God allowed this to happen, this pathway from going pastor to sales, is to find my identity as in my sonship in him and not in my role that I had with him.
Yeah.
It's not when I attended a certain church. It's not when I was a pastor, but it was just me. It's not what I was doing, but it was who I was becoming. So then as a salesperson, there was a time where I was struggling, like, what am I doing? I'm just working for money. I'm not working for, but then really realizing, no, actually as a salesperson, I believe in what I'm doing and I can mm-hmm. add value and I can help. I can bring assistance to my clients. And then switching to coaching, it's more of a combination because there's obvious help that I'm providing in communication exactly. and leadership. It's a little bit more obvious, even though it might not be necessarily Christian. I am a Christian who's doing that work.
Exactly.
And so it's been some paradigm shifts for me that the values I created as a pastor that were very much being expressed in pastoring mm-hmm. are still values that I can carry then as a salesperson and now as a coach publisher.
Wow. You've had quite a journey.
Life is very interesting.
Yes, it is. And it's just so cool what you've done. And now that you have a publishing company. Okay. So what caused you to want to start that?
Yeah. So this is another breadcrumb deal, right?
Yeah.
I think often we follow that breadcrumb. If we're seeking his will, then step into it. So here I was, I had published now 2 books and they'd both done well. And then I had helped a couple people do it. And then COVID hit. And so my sales job slowed down dramatically after a couple weeks. And so now I had all this extra time. Well, I'm working with thought leaders. I was working with several doctors and professors who also had doctorates, right? Mm-hmm. I was working with some CEOs and some executives. And as I'm working with them, they have these messages, they have these ideas. And I'm working on a speech with one of them. She's given this speech for 2 hours. Well, by the time she had finished her manuscript, she had half a book. So I said, you know, doctor, why don't you turn this into a book? And she goes, I don't know how to do that. And I said, I'll help you. And she said, well, what would you charge? Well, I had no idea, right? So I just threw a number out there. She said, okay, let's do it. So we started working on this book with her and it's very technical. So it's taking a little bit of time to publish that one. She's very well known in her circle. So we're wanting to make sure that's one's right. But another doctor at the same time that I'm working with, a chiropractor turned consultant, said, I want in on that deal. So now I have 2 clients who are publishing books, right? So then the next month pulls around, I have an executive and a professor who reach out to me about the same thing. So now we're publishing 4 books. Well, then my sales job kicks back up and yet I have 2 more people coming on board. And so that's at that point where I thought, okay, I have a sales job and I have the side job that makes about a quarter of what I make in sales. But what if I launch out? So I left sales, moved here, and then followed the breadcrumbs. I had people who I was working with and they wanted that from me. They wanted communication and leadership coaching, but now I have another group that's wanting this ability to get their ideas out there. So think about this. In one way, I'm working on a messenger in one company and the other one I'm working on the message and how it gets out and promoting that message. So I launched that. So I have teams that are on both that I'm working with. So I have some ghostwriters and copy editors and a team over here on the publishing side. And I have coaches and a concierge on this side that's helping me work on coaching. All together, they work hand in hand. Sometimes they cross-pollinate, right? I got an author who wants to help over here, or I got some messengers, some speakers who want to get their idea out. So it's just really following that. What is it that people want from you?
Yeah.
And here's the big entrepreneurial lesson. What do people want from you? What is it that people come to you for? And then find ways to offer them that.
I like that. And a question for you, since you're an entrepreneur, how do you figure out what to charge and not feel guilty about making money? I don't know if you've ever felt that.
Yeah, I think for me, it was a process of just experimentation. So at the very beginning, I was like, I'll be a life coach. And what should I charge? And so I think I charged the first person $40 an hour, which is ridiculously cheap for anybody doing that. And then after I did that, I was like, oh, let's try $50 an hour. And really, price comes to this. What are people comfortable paying you? What is the value that you're going to bring to them if they turn that around and go somewhere else? So for example, counseling. A lot of people struggle with paying, you know, $120 of counseling. And I get it. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
But if it's what's going to save your marriage or keep you from suicide, then what is more valuable?
Exactly.
So $120 when it comes to the incredible expense of divorce is nothing.
Yeah.
You'll spend way more on one attorney hour than three sessions with a discounted counselor or a program. So you just think through, what is the ultimate value of this? So if I can help people break through communication and get a promotion, that's a $10,000 a year promotion, or a $20,000 promotion, or a $100,000 promotion, then how valuable is that to people? Or if I can help someone publish a book, that over the course of the life of the book, it will pay the book back.
Exactly.
And not only that, it will build their business and be a high-end business card, then by all means, it's a valuable service. So what is the result of what you give, and what are people willing to pay?
Thank you for that. That is very helpful when you're thinking about that. I want to do this. I love this, but I also need to survive and make money off of it and not feel bad about it. So that's a great way to kind of look at it. I love that.
Right. It's very interesting because if you think about McDonald's, how much are you willing to pay for a cheap burger?
Yeah.
$2. But if you go to a restaurant, how much are you willing to pay for this gourmet burger that's got Kobe beef? And really, they set the price on what people are willing to pay. And so people are willing to pay $15. And so they charge $15. Really finding out what people are willing to pay and then really understanding your own value and how much your value can bring to others. So I recently worked with somebody and they paid me an hourly rate of $350, which is just my hourly rate for just speaking. Most of what I do is programs and workshops and such, but I have an hourly rate on there. So somebody signed up, paid me $700 to coach them for 2 hours, but they landed the job. So what did they say? They said, that was the best $700 I ever spent because their first paycheck is going to be many times that amount.
Yeah. Wow. So what are your goals for the rest of the year? I know 2020 has been kind of a whirlwind, so, so to speak. So what are your goals for the rest of the year for you?
Yeah. So I want to write my fifth book. I'm writing a book right now. And really, it's actually, I'm doing this with my ghostwriter who works for me and my publishing company. I've written all my books, but I have a ghostwriter when I'm working with other people who have ideas that just need someone to put words to their ideas. We're going to write a book together. And we're talking about how to publish a book on your own, if you want to publish it on your own, or if you want to go through a big publisher or a boutique publisher or a small publisher, but how to write, get published, and promote a book. So that's one goal. And then I did get my COVID-19, 19 pounds. So my goal is by the end of the year to get my COVID-19 off. So that's my second goal. And then my third goal, I do quarterly goals. So I just started. My third one is I just started these programs at the beginning of the year and it's done really well. And so my goal is for the end of the year to sell another 20 of those courses and to bring people into those programs.
Those are some good goals.
I love writing goals out. I love writing goals out and then breaking them down into smaller pieces so they seem more attainable.
Yeah, I like, and I'm a goal person too. I like to see it. And then also I have to accomplish mine. I have to do it. If I leave a goal untouched, I just can't rest. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm the same. So my final question for you is, when did you decide that you were brave?
I would have thought I was brave at different times. I would have thought I was brave as a kid when I didn't do what some kids were doing. And then I would have thought I was brave when I was in Mexico. And one time, just because I was different, kids were chasing me, throwing rocks at me, and I didn't run. And it's one of those vivid memories. I was brave when I didn't cry when I wanted to, showing up at school every day. I was brave when I stepped away from a very secure position in going towards law school and then did this, and then brave stepping down from ministry and doing something different. So I look back and say, there are many times that I've been brave, and it's really been, I love your verse for this, is Joshua 1, right? And all throughout, it shows up, what, six times, seven times, be strong and very courageous. And so I would say that I was brave in those different instances, but when did I realize I was brave? I realized I was brave when I was 18 and I stepped away from what was comfortable and I went to what was right.
Yeah.
That was that moment where it stood out to me. It's a moment I've gone back to again and again. The other ones are instances, but that was this kind of center point in my life, this moment that made me say yes. I will say there's been many times I've been a coward, and usually I've been a coward when I know what I should be saying to somebody. I know that I should apologize. I know that I should, but my pride won't let me.
Yeah, same. Thank you so much. This has been such a cool interview. I've really enjoyed talking to you and learning about your story and learning about all the cool things you've done. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you, Alexis. I appreciate just the thoughts and allowing me to relive some different moments and to bring in some different nuggets along the way.
Yeah, it's been a lot of great nuggets. I'm going to put all your contact info in the show notes so people can find you, find your books, and sign up for your courses if they like to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I really say that what is probably relevant to your audience, just what we've talked about, grow your soul. So if you're tired and you just need something to go back up, pick that up on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Audible or wherever you get your reading content from, or The Lead with No Fear. It just, hey, how to step out there and make those shifts, especially if you want to be an entrepreneur or business leader, you want to step out there, how to lead or live with no fear.
I love that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alexis. Appreciate your time.
Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning in to this week's episode. So glad to have you back and so glad to be back chatting with you again. I hope you loved my interview with Mike. His story just amazed me. All the things that he did and him just being obedient and saying yes to God and just kind of taking those leaps into faith and just seeing where God has taken him. And I loved his analogy about breadcrumbs. Like, if you're looking for what your purpose is supposed to be, you will have breadcrumbs that lead you to that purpose. I never thought about that. And I never thought about how, like, what do people ask you about all the time? And what do you advise on? And kind of using that to frame what you may be meant to do. So that was just so insightful for me. And it really helped me when I pursue my own journey of what I want to do with this whole brave thing. All right. My three asks. My first ask, of course, is to share the episode. If you heard something today that you absolutely loved and think will encourage another person, go ahead and share the episode with a friend. Secondly, ratings. Ratings are so helpful. I love you guys. I'm so happy that I have people who support and listen to the show. I am so appreciative of my listeners. And if you're loving what you're hearing, ratings help me know what I'm doing well, things I need to work on. I appreciate and covet your ratings. And people who have done that for me have just been so thankful for you. And then finally, subscribe. If you want to get the show a day early, you can subscribe to the email list and put your info in my contact us box on my website. And that's it. You're on the email list and you get the episodes a day early via email. Also, you can subscribe wherever you have your podcast go. So like Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Apple, Amazon, Pandora, iHeartRadio. You can listen anywhere. Thank you guys again for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye.